Welcome to Listener's Advisory, the San Diego Public Library podcast. Our season finale is here. Today, we'll hear from several individuals working to address the needs of library patrons experiencing homelessness. So stick around. This should be interesting. If you go to the San Diego Public Library's About the Library tab on our homepage, you can find a sidebar with a bulleted hyperlink that reads Policies and Principles. By clicking the link, you'll find guiding principles from the American Library Association, which SDPL endorses and supports, including the Library Bill of Rights. The fifth principle in the Library Bill of Rights reads, "A person's right to use a library should not be denied or abridged because of origin, age, background, or views." This guiding principle informs many aspects of SDPL's mission and day-to-day business. Simply put, everyone is welcome. While the notion of a free, welcoming library and its accompanying resources being open to all feels like a core aspect of American society, it's an idea that's not without controversy.
An absolute dump of a library, homeless infested at all times of day.
Be aware of many homeless people.
Great library, but the homeless population that use this facility as a daytime living area is a problem.
Once the homeless issue is taken care of, I'll actually go back.
That's some of my colleagues reading some choice Yelp reviews about the Central Library at Joan and Irwin Jacobs Common, located in downtown San Diego. It's the place where I work and have done so for the majority of my near 25-year career with SDPL. While those and similar reviews are certainly in the minority among the pages and pages of glowing reviews, complaints about individuals experiencing homelessness occupying library spaces is nothing new. However, what many of us take for granted when using the library are the very things cherished by the unhoused. What would you say are the primary services the library offers to patrons experiencing homelessness?
So first and foremost, we offer a safe space, not just to unhoused patrons, but to anybody. But I think for homeless people, it's truly a good spot for them to come, get out of the elements, have a nice place to sit, relax. That's first and foremost, that's what we provide.
That's Michelle Ruiz, manager of the Sciences Department, which oversees various social service programs offered at Central. Her sentiment is shared by Mission Valley branch manager Karen Riley.
Well, I'd say the primary resources that we provide to people who are homeless are the same ones that we provide to anyone else, which is access to the materials, access to the internet computers, access to bathrooms and places to sit. The difference being that with many patrons who are homeless, they're just using these services in a more sustained fashion. So instead of coming in and checking out books, they might come in and read in the library all day or use computers all day if they are available. They'll use the bathroom multiple times. And we're providing heat and shelter. We're providing a place to be that's safe, because even people who are not living outdoors but are living in homeless shelters, many of our local homeless shelters close as early as 5 in the morning and their residents are asked to leave. So they need a place to go during the day. Being just on the street all day is exhausting and dangerous. In the summer it's hot, in the winter it's cold. People don't want you loitering all day. The library is a place where you can just come, be, mind your own business, and then go back to your shelter at night.
One of the few places in the American public that you can be without spending money.
Exactly.
One of the few places you can be in America without spending money is a refrain in library world. This phrase, spoken often among librarians, rings true and loud for us because we so often hear complaints about the mere presence of someone suspected of experiencing homelessness. That being said, maintaining open doors to all does mean that we can and do encounter individuals in varying states of crisis.
So, obviously, we don't ask our patrons their housing status. Sometimes someone will come up to me and identify as unhoused or homeless, and that's usually because they're seeking resources. So we'll help connect them to resources such as a place to get a hot meal or to get a shower or storage for their things.
Crisis can mean many things, including the need for shelter, clothes, and medical attention. Often, connecting folks to these kinds of resources can be beyond our expertise as professionals. So what's the social worker intern program? Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so we're in our second year of hosting graduate students from San Diego State who are in the social work, getting their master's of social work degree. Ideally, we'd love to have a full-time certified social worker here in the library. Until that happens, we make do with these interns. Again, they're in their second year of their program. And what they do is a field internship where they apply what they've learned in the classroom into real life settings. They connect patrons to resources. They provide warm handoffs to our providers. They'll help patrons fill out a housing form or an unemployment form. They'll let patrons make a phone call. You know, it's so hard to find a place to make a phone call these days.
The social worker intern program has been a boon for many of us on the front lines. In the course of our jobs, we are often met with circumstances and situations we are not prepared for, nor have been trained to deal with. While the social worker intern program has been great, it's a single aspect of a multi-pronged approach being applied here at Central. What is NAMI?
NAMI is a nonprofit organization that aims to support, educate, and advocate everything in regards to people experiencing mental health. So we support folks with understanding their experience and how to access resources. We educate folks on mental illness and the communities around them. And then we advocate for those who need the help with learning how to advocate for themselves. How's it going, y'all? My name is Aaron Basila, and I am the program manager for the Mental Health Clubhouse down here on 16th and Imperial called Connection to Community.
My name is Gedayahu Ben-Shimon. I work with NAMI C2C Clubhouse. I'm a homeless outreach worker. I've been doing it for a couple of years.
Gedayahu, also known as G, worked in our Homeless and Mental Health Outreach Center on the third floor of the Central Library as part of a partnership between the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or NAMI, and SDPL. While G has since retired, the homeless outreach worker's role is to provide counseling out of the third floor office to individuals seeking resources related to homelessness and mental health.
The library and NAMI have a MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding. It is the, as I understand it, the goal of the public library to offer assistance to its patrons. And so that's where NAMI comes in. We filter and give guidance and clarify whatever goal that particular patron comes to us for. And even though it's the mental health is the title, I can talk to people about how to get a bus pass, just the whole anything that will stress you out because you don't have the knowledge. I try to have that information available to the library's patrons.
As I mentioned earlier, library workers are often not trained to provide the kind of help individuals experiencing homelessness can require, especially those who are chronically homeless or experiencing other, deeper crises. What kind of services does the center offer? Like, what are some specific examples?
It can be a myriad of things, being accessing documents, helping you obtain a new ID, helping you obtain a new birth certificate, whether that be in-state or out-of-state. And then anything in regards to helping you understand how to access benefits, whether that be getting medical benefits or getting SSI benefits, Social Security income. And then also other things such as accessing shelters, accessing the housing survey that other agencies do so that they can be put in a type of queue to help them be matched for housing for later.
And so when you say mental health, sometimes that process of going through whatever agency needs, let me or having me talk to that person and understanding really what they're asking versus what maybe a patron misunderstands, sometimes that clarification I can accommodate. If they don't have an email, I can get the form sent to me. I can print it out. Just anything that will help close that gap between a barrier and the service that person is seeking.
So the title of Mental Health Outreach Center maybe is kind of an opening, but maybe the deeper service is that it's connecting folks to social services and things that are offered to folks in our community that they may otherwise have difficulty navigating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one big thing that we see is that folks just don't know where to go. So what we help them understand is we help them understand what they're asking for and what that path looks like, whether that be helping them, again, obtaining their documents so that they're able to access certain services. And once they're accessing those services, help translate what those agencies are explaining to them, because sometimes there is a type of confusion and ultimately folks are looking to have quick answers to fix their situation. And we're there to, you know, iron out the wrinkles and help them broaden their perspective regarding it.
Gotcha. It's daunting, I can tell you that. Mm-hmm. It sounds like, so in my business, you know, when I work the reference desk as a reference librarian, people come up and they often will say, do you have X, Y, or Z? And one of the tricks of our trade is to perform what's called the reference interview, where we really try to question them about, you know, what it is that they're after, what it is that they really want, so that we can kind of figure out, okay, what's the path that we actually have to take? Because oftentimes people won't even realize what it is they need. So it sounds like you guys do that in your business as well.
Mm-hmm. But to definitely clarify, we don't make the decisions for them, so that one protects the members and protects ourselves. So what we end up doing is doing a lot of clarifying questions to make sure, are you sure this is what you want? You clarify certain things so that they don't sign up for something that could later harm them later, or they've spent X amount of time and then they find out that that's not even the service that they were looking for.
And they come in kind of exhausted at times, just because, like Aaron said, they didn't know really what to ask for. They really don't know what they need. And so they think they've been receiving the runaround. And the fact is that they really are not pursuing the correct thing with the correct agency. And so we get to clarify that. Another thing that I think is very interesting is I hear that there's this thing and, you know, I want it. And, you know, some things are vet things, some things are senior citizen things, some things are for families. And a young male will not qualify for those things. And so we kind of get them past that and then just look at how to really set up a true goal for what they can do in their life.
You've probably noticed the word exhausting has been used a couple times now, and that's not by accident. If there's anything I've directly observed, it's that homelessness can be an exhausting experience. It's boring, it's scary, it's frustrating to no end. From being invisible in some instances to being the only person in the room in others, the scrutiny can be dehumanizing. On top of that, there's a common misconception that people experiencing homelessness have chosen it.
Yeah, no one's asking for this. It's not fun. It's not some big freedom situation that everybody's going through. We're like, hey, isn't it nice that people are dropping water bottles off to us every couple hours? I always challenge folks who make those kind of comments to go, you know, how would you respond if it was your brother, your mother, your cousin, a friend, if they were going through that kind of situation? I always ask people to have a little more empathy in regards to what these folks are going through.
Compassion, empathy, and service are at the core of library workers' daily lives. As an individual that's worked Central Library's front lines for decades, I'll be the first to say that I've had bouts of compassion fatigue and felt the realities on the ground are hopeless. One thing for folks in my business is library folks, because, you know, libraries are a public place, we've long provided service to all walks of the public, including people experiencing homelessness. But we are certainly in unprecedented times. And one of the things that happens amongst folks in my business is compassion fatigue. Oh. And finding it difficult with dealing with the barrage of problems that folks on the streets are dealing with. And it's become a thing that we're all trying to put our heads together to figure out how do we navigate this. Because even, you know, I finished library school a few years ago, and there wasn't very much in there about self-care, compassion fatigue, how do you reset, what are the true responsibilities of libraries. You know, a refrain I hear in my business is, I didn't go to school for this. And so I certainly didn't go to school to be a social worker, but as I was in school, I knew exactly what I was getting into. And so I think I have a little bit of a different mindset. And so I'm certainly concerned with how do I navigate compassion fatigue? Because I've certainly felt it at times. I've experienced it. And I imagine it's something that y'all probably experience as well.
Well, I would say because we're in the mental health field, NAMI is very, very proactive about self-care. And we promote that at the clubhouse, right? But I think the thing that no one is prepared for where we discuss mental health is how you're going to feel, you know, on your way to work. You see somebody getting beat up, or if you see a person asleep near the gutter, a person talking to themselves, that sense of helplessness and, or shouldn't there be somebody handling that? You know, that weighs on you because we are caring human beings. Most people, I would put the numbers up to maybe 85% really are humanistic and they care that people do better and stuff like that, but they can feel helpless. And that education, just like what we're doing now, as to really what's happening with people, if the more they're aware of just the level of challenge people are going through, then they won't have expectation like, oh, you know, a glass of water is the solution. Oh, just go get your ID as the solution. Everybody can have a greater understanding of really the big challenge and prepare their mind for it, right? It's that unexpected thing, that one more thing. You thought you had this resolved and, you know, you just never realized that people were in this condition of maybe you would consider irresponsibility, but you wouldn't understand that it's trauma, and you wouldn't understand that it's mental illness. It's not choice. Having that type of insight and knowledge can help you take it with a grain of salt, do your best, and realize, you know, you just can't win them all. You cannot win them all. You take your wins when you can and celebrate them.
What's been your experience as a librarian serving patrons in crisis?
It's definitely not what I thought I would be doing as a librarian. And coming from a branch in a rather affluent neighborhood, it's certainly been different from what I was used to. You definitely have to be on your toes. You've got to be able to pivot if a situation goes 180. But honestly, when I told people that I was transferring downtown, they were like, are you crazy? That's what I was told. You know, coming out of the don't go for a walk out there because there's homeless people all over the place. But it's not like that. You know, you really have to come and experience it for yourself. Decide for yourself, is this a place that I want to work? And certainly I could have said, oh no, this isn't me. But I wouldn't say it's been challenging. And maybe that's a testament to the training that I've had from, you know, my mentors and peers. But I find it gratifying, probably more gratifying in helping people who truly need help. When, you know, there's a big difference in finding somebody the book that they've been looking for and connecting somebody to a bed, to a place to sleep for the night.
Of course, serving patrons experiencing homelessness or who are otherwise in crisis isn't always heartache. Do you guys have any success stories that you can recount about the work that you do?
First, a definition of success has to be reworked, right? Do we have people who've gone from homelessness to homes? Yes. Have people gone from homelessness to starting their own businesses? Yes. Have people also started their own business and failed? Well, that's just part of the normal life, right? So some of the success stories, yeah, we chip them pretty thin. And sometimes it's just showing up and not yelling as much. Showing up and believing that NAMI does care, mm-hmm. and that they can go ahead and resubmit their paperwork and, you know, have some idea that this process will work for them. I don't think we have a corner of the market on some super, you know, magic fairy dust that, you know, makes homeless people suddenly get it all. But we're persistent, and I try to really give them the full picture up front. And so along that path, there's a lot of successes.
Again, Karen Riley.
Well, I mean, I think we do have success stories every day, just in providing the services that we normally provide. Being able to continue to provide those to people who are unhoused or very low income is a success in itself. Being able to be a welcoming place and to provide those services to everyone, I think, you know, that's a success story in and of itself. And not being the kind of place where we say, oh, you're clearly homeless, we're going to make you unwelcome here. I've had the occasional success story with people who are actually, I know, homeless, who have become housed. And that has been really heartwarming. I had one patron who was wheelchair bound. He was a veteran. He was living under a bridge on the nearby golf course. That's where he lived. He had difficulty with being in shelters. He had difficulty with following rules. He had difficulty with living with other people. And I was in frequent communication with his social worker, with the VA. You know, if he disappeared for a while, she would call me. If he disappeared for a while, I might call her to find out where he was. He finally got housing in El Cajon, an apartment of his own. And he reached out to her to let me know. And, you know, I was so happy for him. He could be challenging, but he also, at one point when he was in the library, he said, "You guys are my family." And, you know, that warmed my heart. At the same time, it was heartbreaking that we were it. So that was a success story that actually made my week.
My goal when I started developing this piece was not to illustrate the perils of working in libraries, nor center library workers as champions of service. It was with the sole purpose of addressing the elephant in the room that so rarely gets discussed once the record button gets hit. It's my hope that listeners can add some dimension to their understanding, not only of SDPL's core philosophical principle that our doors are open to all, but that individuals in crisis are members of my community, your community, our community. That's going to do it for this third season. I'd like to thank today's guests, Michelle Ruiz, Karen Riley, Aaron Basila, and Gedayahu Ben-Shimon. For more information on the resources mentioned in today's episode, please see our show notes or visit us at sandiego.gov/SDPL podcast. This podcast is supported by the Library Foundation SD. For more information on the good work they do, visit libraryfoundationsd.org. If you like what we're doing here at Listener's Advisory, please consider sharing our podcast on your social media, leave us a rating or review via your favorite podcast directory, or tell someone you know about us. Thanks in advance.